You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Reveal. Tonight, a look back at the Phoenix VA scandal that led to changes in veterans' health care. Then, how veterans' choice legislation turned Alaska's homegrown health care system upside down, leaving some VA hospitals strangled with red tape. That's coming up tonight at 7 on Reveal. First, there are only 49 days until the presidential election this November. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and Republican candidate Donald Trump have vastly different takes on many of the big issues in this election year, including the economy, national security, and education. But the candidates do have one thing in common. They struggle to attract younger voters. Last week, two major polls found that more than a third of voters under the age of 30 are planning to vote for one of the third-party candidates, either Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party or Jill Stein of the Green Party. In a Quinnipiac University poll released last week, only 31% of voters under 35 supported Clinton in a four-way race, and 3 in 5 young voters have a, quote, strongly unfavorable view of Donald Trump. Constance Flanagan joins us now to talk about why young voters aren't supporting the major party candidates in this election. She's a professor of human ecology and associate dean of the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Connie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Why aren't young people getting behind the major party candidates this year?
Well, it may be early, so I don't think we should jump to conclusions. A lot of people are still making up their minds. I think in part, if you contrast the current election with the candidates that the millennials did get behind at this time around Bernie Sanders in the primary and behind Barack Obama in 2008, there was a kind of aspirational quality to both of those campaigns, some sort of sense of, you know, a clear contrast in the way things are and the sort of hope about what could be. So both, I think Sanders made it clear that the inequality was the clear thing on the agenda, and linking the what millennials face themselves in terms of things like college debt or low-wage work. So the $15 an hour campaign and the issue of college debt, and linking that to the broader issue of inequality was pretty effective. And then there was an alternative. It was sort of like, we can make a different kind of America. So that was appealing. I don't see that they're completely turned off. I think it's a matter now for the candidates to make it clear why millennials and their future is linked to the policies that the candidates are proposing. And I think young people will listen.
You said it's maybe too early to be making that claim that millennials aren't on board with either Trump or Clinton, but there's only 49 days left. Doesn't it seem like we're in the home stretch now and that what we're seeing now looks kind of unusual?
Well, but young people are so facile at making decisions. I mean, they're a mobile group. They can register online in, I think, over 30 states now. So a lot can still happen. And I know Hillary Clinton is sending out a lot of surrogates to, you know, things like tailgates and places where young people would be to, and Bernie Sanders is going out, and Elizabeth Warren, so, and President Obama. So I think there's an appeal going out from at least that camp, that campaign, to say why it's in their interest to, you know, make it clear. The other thing that often happens when it's your first time to vote is, like, there's an ideal possible world that you sort of imagine. And so the fact that politics is about compromise and accommodation may not seem that attractive. But I think when the millennials begin to connect what kind of world they want and what they believe in to what the two platforms stand for, we're going to see a lot more come over.
Now, you're saying when they begin to connect that world with the world they live in, I mean, how does that happen? Because so far it hasn't happened, and we've had two conventions, Republican and Democratic. We've had campaigning. So what's in the secret sauce that millennials suddenly realize there is something in these candidates?
Well, as the election gets closer, it will become more and more a question of conversation. I think the fact that there are rallies happening in the places where they are will cause people to talk more about the issues. And normative pressure from peers is a huge reason why people register and vote. So as soon as you have friends that are talking about it and saying it's important, that catches on. So I'm actually more optimistic than the current polls suggest.
We're talking to Constance Flanagan right now from UW-Madison about why it seems that young voters are hesitant, they're reluctant to throw in behind either of the major presidential candidates this year from either party. And we're taking your calls on this at 800-642-1234. Why do you think it seems that younger voters aren't getting behind the major party candidates this presidential election season? And do you agree with our guest? Do you agree with Constance Flanagan that they will fall in line between one party or the other? It just has to pick up a little momentum, and they have to tie some of their ideals to the real world struggles and decide who they align with. Do you think that's going to happen? Or do you think there's something different about these candidates and this year? If you're a young person, if you're a millennial, how are you feeling right now? Call 800-642-1234. And Constance, we were talking about how both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are going to be out on the stump for Hillary Clinton, trying to galvanize these young voters, these millennials, and get them excited. So what is the Donald Trump equivalent of that? Does he have a move that will maybe accomplish the same thing?
I don't know actually what the possible appeal is, and I'm actually not familiar with what it is that his campaign's doing specifically for young voters. So I actually don't know what the strategies are there in the campaign. The one issue that the millennial generation is more diverse demographically than any generation has been, and they're also much more tolerant. So the kinds of things they stand for sort of are not a great match for the kinds of things he has stood for. So I don't know how much he's reaching out to the youth vote.
And do you think it matters to him?
Well, winning matters, I suppose, to anybody. And at least what I've read, the millennials represent a potential one-third of the electorate if they come out. That's as big as the baby boom. And we know the baby boom will come out. So they have huge potential. There's some analyses of the 2012 youth vote that suggest that it was young people who swung the elections in places like Ohio, Florida, Virginia, so in the presidential race. So their vote matters in terms of who wins. So it makes sense for the candidates to reach out for them. I'm just not sure whether the messages of the Trump campaign are a good match for the kinds of things that, in general, the millennials are standing for. Keeping in mind, they are a very diverse group. So, we're generalizing for a whole generation, and there's a lot of variability within that group.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Mike joining us from Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. I don't understand the Clinton organization, why they didn't give Bernie Sanders either the vice presidential running position or concretely extend to him perhaps Secretary of State, because he was probably garnering 7 out of 10 out of the youth who are the dynamic part of any campaign. And even presently, I think this youth is trying to figure out who they really want to go for. I just can't understand why. It seems to me like Clinton picked a similar running mate as what the Alaska governor Sarah Palin amounted to for I guess 10 years ago that was now. But anyway, it just didn't seem like it was a good dynamic pick in order to pull the youth vote in. And when I ask people what they think about Hillary's running mate Mike Pence, most people don't realize that I'm actually not telling them the right name. They can't tell me who her running mate even is.
Mike, thanks for that. And what do you make of all the arguments that Mike has there? He's wondering, first and foremost, why the Clinton campaign didn't bring Bernie Sanders on board in a strong way as a VP pick or an offer for Secretary of State, because he would have brought that youth vote.
Well, it's hard to say what goes on behind the scenes. None of us are really privy to that. at least in the convention, what all of us watched, you know, on the convention, it seemed like Bernie Sanders and his campaign felt like in the platform they got a lot of what they wanted to happen. And so there was a commitment on the part of, you know, the Clinton team that the 15 minimum wage, et cetera, were things that they stood for. I have no idea what are the bases for, you know, for how these picks happen. That said, I mean, it is the case that people like Elizabeth Warren or even President Obama are out there stumping for her now. So, I mean, and I understand what President Obama is saying, particularly the young people, is that there's the worry that a lot that was accomplished in his 8 years, you know, could go backwards, and that people should start standing up and being worried about that. So, I do think that, I mean, young people get excited about dynamism and change and the plodding nature of being a policy wonk and, you know, compromising is not as exciting in terms of a first campaign to get involved in, but that's the way the politics works.
We're talking to Connie Flanagan right now from the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison, talking about why young voters are struggling with major party presidential candidates. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Why do you think younger voters aren't getting behind the major party candidates in this cycle? And if you are one of these younger voters, if you're a millennial, who are you supporting and why? Or are you undecided and you're waiting for something to click? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll be back with this conversation after a short break here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our discussion now with Connie Flanagan from the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. And we're talking about young voters and their seeming reluctance to support either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton in this election. And we're taking your calls right now at 800-642-1234. What do you think would help to engage young voters in this election cycle? And why do you think millennial voters aren't really into either major party candidate right now? If you're a younger voter, have you picked somebody? And if not, what are you waiting for? Call 800-642-1234. And you can also post your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll take a caller now. We've got Mark with us in Delavan. Mark, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, you two. I disagree with your guest. I don't think that that all the millennials, I mean, I'm sure she wouldn't say all the millennials, but I think a significant portion of them will not come around, especially college kids. I think there's been a lot of discussion of the issues and differences between Sanders and Clinton. For example, Clinton is still very close to the banks and has not released the transcripts of her her talks to the banks. There's also the issue of she's very much of a war hawk, and a lot of us are very, myself and some younger voters, are very not happy with President Obama's wars. And a lot of us feel that they're unnecessary, that we're creating
enemies.
And
Mark, do you project that millennials then will stay home?
That is a great question. So many of all of us, including millennials, are told that their vote for a third-party candidate, for example, Jill Stein, would be wasted, and that would be a vote for Trump. And other people make other arguments saying that we can't keep just voting for the lesser evil. So where is each individual student going to come down on that? Do they believe that there's a good reason to vote for a third-party candidate, or they just say it doesn't matter and stay home?
Mark, thanks a lot for your thoughts there. And Mark's saying he doesn't really think people are going to come around, young voters are going to come around, if they have these fundamental, foundational differences with either candidate. He's talking in this case about Hillary Clinton. So what do you think about that question? Do you think these young voters will stay home on Election Day?
Well, I think he makes a good point. I mean, apparently there's a lot of young people are interested in the Libertarian Party because, in part, of their non-interventionist foreign policy. So I think he's making a good point. And it is true that whenever we face an election, it's our principles and our values and whether the candidates live up to them. And that may be a more important thing for first-time voters, so that sacrificing principle and accommodating is just something that ethically people have a hard time doing. That said, I mean, some of us lived through the third party candidate of Ralph Nader, and so something about aging perhaps makes you more accommodating to the practice as opposed to the principle of what is the alternative. So we can live with principles, and I happen to think that's a really important thing to do, but there are consequences in practice if large numbers of people decide either to go with a third party for a presidential or to stay home.
And I want to get in one more quick call. Sam in Madison is next. Sam, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment and say that I am a millennial, and I have a millennial, and I previously voted for Jill Stein back in 2008. But I am personally supporting Hillary Clinton this year because I feel like with some of the third-party platforms and absolutely in the Trump campaign, they are more bullheading their politics instead of meeting in a moderate middle. And Clinton has a record of working with people, regardless of how you feel about what she's worked on.
Sam, thanks a lot for calling. And Sam seems to have decided she'd voted for Jill Stein in the past. Now she is supporting Hillary Clinton as a millennial. And Connie, as we wrap up, you said you think that some of these younger voters will decide. What are you watching for in the next several weeks to indicate which direction the wind is blowing? And just briefly, please.
Well, I'll definitely pay attention to what the polling says, but I also have my ear to what's going on a campus, although a large number of millennials are not on campuses, and so we have to remember that. So I'll keep my ear to the conversations that are going on around the young people around me.
Connie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Constance Flanagan, professor of human ecology and associate dean of the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. And she joined us there talking about why young voters seem to be struggling to support major party candidates in this presidential election. Some people who want to add solar panels to their homes or businesses are leery of the cost, and some have found a solution. Dozens of people are joining together and getting a discount from the installer. A just-completed group buy of solar power in the Milwaukee area may have been the state's largest. Chuck Kornbach reports.
At the home of Quentin Bendixson and Jamie Fershinger in Milwaukee's Bayview neighborhood, there are six solar panels on the roof, generating nearly 2 kilowatts, a relatively tiny amount, but more than enough power for this 1,100-square-foot home to run appliances, lights, this kitchen radio. The solar panels, a meter, and other equipment here are only 2 months old, as this summer Bendixson and Fershinger signed up for a group buy of solar power, organized by the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, the City of Milwaukee, and Village of Shorewood. Bendixson says the roughly 20% savings from guaranteeing a contractor a large amount of work finally helped make solar a go.
They've been doing the group buy for a couple years now, and I've gone to every year, I've gone to every session, and I run the numbers because I want to do it, but it also has to make sense. And this is the first year that I felt like it really made sense.
Jamie Fershinger says it also helped that the City of Milwaukee is backing the group buy and emphasized that any neighborhood could take part.
Shows that it's a priority to the city, and it starts the conversation in the community.
But Fershinger and Bendixson quickly add that the falling prices of solar panels and the panels' greater efficiency also were key factors. Their house is still on the grid, meaning electricity and natural gas from local utility We Energies will still be used, but the couple hopes the payback on their solar investment will be 8 years or less. The Midwest Renewable Energy Association reports that about 50 people have signed up for the group buy that ended last Friday, including some business owners. Airplanes seem to sound louder and fly lower when you're on the roof of a five-story apartment building. This is the newly renovated Sage on Prospect complex, which has 96 solar panels providing electricity to about 30 tenants. Mike O'Connor is co-owner of the building. He says the way that he's plugged utility charges into the rent, the cheaper to operate solar will pay off for him.
And that's really the concept that I think is the most powerful one, is that if I can get across to other landlords and other developers out there that they can make money by being green, then I think that they'll probably be interested in doing that.
O'Connor has not only added solar panels on the apartment building, he's also joined the group buy to put solar on his home in the suburbs. Elizabeth Hittman coordinates sustainability programs for the city of Milwaukee, and for group buys has helped streamline the permit process. Hittman says while she's trying to spread group solar across the area, it's not for everyone.
If you have too much shading on your roof, or, you know, if you're renting a home and your landlord isn't interested, that, you know, it wouldn't really be an option for you.
And Hittman says at $5,000 to $7,000 for a typical residential project that's after tax credits, some homeowners can't afford solar just yet. Electric utilities say the mini surge in solar homes has forced them to raise fixed rates on utility bills because most solar users still need electric wires and other infrastructure. But Peter Murphy of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association says MREA plans to coordinate more group buys because people want more control over their power supply.
Democratization, decentralization. When you own your own solar panels, you're basically your own little power plant.
Or plants if you team up with others on a group solar purchase. Chuck Quernbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time.